you feel invisible almost, because I'm like, okay, I turn on the TV and I don't really see many people that represent me at all. And then is also this thing of like lumping all Latinos together or Latinx people together, right? So it's like, okay, there might be Mexican actors or actresses or maybe Mexican stories, but that's also not representative of my particular background either. So that's another thing to always kind of think about, like, well, we're not all the same. There's just so many nuances being Latino. It's complex. Like, identity is not easy. And I think that's one thing maybe people don't always understand when they're thinking about it. It's just like the complexities, whether it's colorism within like Latinx communities, whether it's just like coming from different areas. Are you Caribbean? Are you, you know, from South America? There's like a lot of different things that go on that maybe people aren't really aware of.
Hey, welcome back, Koyif Pod fam. We hope the holiday break was kind to you all. And as we're ready to re-engage with you on this wondrous journey of discovering the richness of Puerto Rico and its people. And on today's episode of this journey, I've got a special guest subbing in for Lou to help me out.
Hey everybody, it's Navani and I'm super excited to be here.
Yes, yes, yes. Navani has been kind enough to lend her voice and time to this season in a variety of ways. Reading the Taino creation myth, you may have heard during the cold open of episode 1, that John was dope, to providing thoughts and reflections about how her Puerto Rican identity has shaped and influenced her life. So I'm really geeked to have her imprint even more of her dopeness by serving as my co-host.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity, especially considering the idea of a Puerto Rican identity and how it's often been inaccurately portrayed in popular culture and media. I mean, of course, speaking only for myself, I can say there isn't one singular box that contains Puerto Rican identity or our experience as a people. It's definitely nuanced and layered.
Ooh, good point. The Puerto Rican experience isn't monolithic and should never be treated as such. And with that in mind, we'll be investigating the multifaceted nature of what it means to be Puerto Rican.
Power.
You.
It's Navani.
And Wilson too.
On The Power of You in Fiction, episode 4, Puerto Rican Enough.
Before the mid-season break, Lou and I were looking at the complexity of identity. And we worked through some of that using language and its impact on culture. Now, what I want us to do here is look at that complexity as it relates to standing secure in our cultural identity and the work it takes for some of us to grow comfortable in that secureness, especially when we're being challenged by those in and outside of our culture.
Yes, I am nodding along furiously for the audience that can't see, but yes, this is a major point here. I know for me personally, there was this idea that if you didn't look a certain way or if you didn't speak fluent Spanish, you were less Puerto Rican. And I feel like for many people outside of the culture, their example might have been someone like a Rosie Perez, right? And so here I come and I don't look like Rosie and I don't talk like her. And then within the culture, on the flip side, I was berated because I didn't speak fluent Spanish. But my parents made that a conscious choice to make English my first language to save me from discrimination that they experienced growing up. So, I mean, it's a struggle many bicultural people can probably relate to, with having one foot in one world and one in the other. So I never quite felt truly accepted as American. And then again, not quite Puerto Rican enough.
Ooh, yeah, I definitely know that a lot of folks can resonate with that one. Even me, in a way, you know, leaving Jamaica and coming up to the States when I was like 8 or 9 and then, you know, like losing my Jamaican accent or not having it as deep enough or having it enough where Americans can hear it.
Right.
But then like it's not thick enough where Jamaicans can hear it. So there's like this whole like, ooh, you know.
Right.
There's that gray that you're always trying to navigate.
So yes.
I definitely vibe. And your story, it actually reminds me of another knowledge nugget that Esmeralda shared with Lou. Like, she had a lot and she dropped this one right here.
In Puerto Rico, there's always this discussion about, you know, some people have established degrees of Puerto Ricanness. Not me, but some people have done that. And I very frequently, I will hear from someone at a reading, at a presentation, at a dinner with people who will say, I'm 100% Puerto Rican, as if, you know, there are degrees of that. And I always have to set these people right and say, there are no degrees. It's like being pregnant. You either are or you're not, you know, you can't be a little bit pregnant. So I am Puerto Rican. I identify as Puerto Rican. I feel like that's who I am. I'm still the girl who grew up in this little barrio in Toa Baja. That person is the same person. But I'm the kind of Puerto Rican who speaks English. I'm the kind of Puerto Rican who for 17 years was an Indian classical dancer doing the dances of South India, even though I'm from Puerto Rico, you know. I'm the Puerto Rican who loves opera. I'm a Puerto Rican who loves baseball. Well, yeah, that's a big part of our culture. But it's not that there are degrees of Puerto Ricanness, it's that there's different kinds of Puerto Ricans. And one is better than the other. They're just different. My siblings are very different kinds of Puerto Ricans from me. My sisters are very, very traditional Puerto Rican cooks. Fabulous. All of them. Really, really good. I was for many, many years a vegetarian, vegan, and that didn't mean that I didn't have some Puerto Rican foods, but I was not going to be having the pernil at Christmas, you know. I was not going to. So I have had to talk to myself and explain to myself those kinds of things in order to be able to function when people ask questions like that. You know, I'm 100% Puerto Rican. Well, good for you. So am I, you know. And usually when they do that, when they say that, it's really to try and establish that I am less than they are. And at that point, that this is really their issue. It's not my issue because I don't feel any less just because I'm a vegetarian, you know, or because I, you know, speak English or whatever. I'm still the same person, but I have many other skills in addition to my Puerto Rican-ness. And so those kinds of things are something that you decide as you mature. You realize, okay, this is the decision. And I think I'm 100% Puerto Rican without all the trappings that people place upon themselves in order to prove to other people that they are. So no, you do not see my Puerto Rican flag outside my home. No, I don't wear the Puerto Rican flag on my clothes for any holiday, including the parades. You know, that's not what identifies me, who I am, but who I am is who I am.
So it seems like this identity challenge or discussion, as Esmeralda called it, has been around for a while and remains persistent. So what happened for you, Navani, that led you to being as secure in your identity as you are now? Was it like maturity or just this defining moment?
It was like not one moment. It definitely came incrementally with age and kind of like seeking out more of my own cultural history on my own, because you know, it's not taught in schools. So you had to seek it out. And I just remember especially a lot in college, just like finding leaders that were Puerto Rican and learning about them, like Pedro Albizu Campos, who was, leading the independent movement, the Young Lords who were here, you know, in the U.S., leading a movement for civil rights, and reading books like War on All Puerto Ricans. It kind of gave me the knowledge of self and something to stand on and feel like secure in that knowledge. And also talking to different people and learning that I'm not the only one with these experiences and that no two experiences are exactly alike. So when I put that together, it kind of dispelled the idea that there's only one right way to be Puerto Rican, you know? Or it's like, just because if you grew up in New York and not in the island, you're less than. Or because you speak more English than Spanish, like whatever the case. You know, there's this wonderful quote that Eduardo shared with me when I interviewed him once that was from the Young Lords. And it says, "Tengo Puerto Rico en mi corazón." And I feel that so much. I carry Puerto Rico in my heart. I mean, that's it.
Ooh, yeah, that's hella real. That is hella, hella real. And I wanted to grab on to the learning more about your cultural history and the strength you find in that. Because being challenged from within the culture, like, that's one thing, right?
Right.
But then there's the hazard of also having your unique Puerto Rican identity being washed out by folks who aren't familiar with the many nuances and differences, the cultures that reside under this great umbrella that is the Latin diaspora.
For me, in my experience, even though I have, you know, Puerto Rican family and I grew up on the island for a time back and forth when I was a lot younger, my experience is probably closest to, like you mentioned, someone from Wichita, Kansas, where it's so completely disconnected from major cities like New York and Miami and Chicago that have a huge Puerto Rican and Latinx community that I honestly didn't know much of Puerto Rico's own history and just how intense and involved the issues with colonialization and the whole diaspora movement had an effect on the island and the communities off the island. If there was any sort of Hispanic quote-unquote community that I was surrounded by, it was mostly Mexican. So whenever there were times where, like during Hispanic Heritage Month, where emphasis would kind of shift into Hispanic culture and traditions and celebration, it was mostly Mexican focused. And people will be looking at me like, yeah, you vibe with this, right? And I'm like, yeah, this is fun, but this isn't quite me. And it's a little confusing for me because although there are similarities in these two cultures, they're two completely distinct celebrations and histories. And so, because of course my family, you know, we're just trying to go by our day to day lives. It's not like my mom's going to come from work one day and just be like, hey, let me tell you about the Ponce massacre. And I'm just like, what? Like, no, she, like, so no, we wouldn't have those, you know, moments where we learn about the deep history. And so it wasn't until later on in college when I was working on my thesis that I actually started, I guess, relearning myself everything that was going on. It's like, oh, I have, you know, Puerto Rican friend and I didn't know anything about the history. Well, imagine being Puerto Rican and not knowing your own history. It's a completely different experience. And although it's kind of bittersweet because I'm upset that I didn't grow up learning about these histories and learning about these creators and powerful people who shape Puerto Rican culture and experience, it's a huge honor to be able to have that choice to do it now as an adult.
I totally relate to Ronnie's story and how many times the grand scheme of things, you know, in this country, when people think of Latinx culture, they often think Mexican. And that's not the case. They kind of lump us all together when our cultures are really very different and unique. So even if you think of like Spanish food, then a lot of people think, oh, tacos. And it's very frustrating to feel like, you know, invisible a lot of times. So I had to go out and find Latino authors, which was really life-changing to me, like Esmeralda Santiago, who we mentioned, or Julia Alvarez, and find stories of people with very similar experience to my own to kind of latch on to.
Word, yeah, definitely having that one sit for a sec, because, you know, having that predominant, quote-unquote, Spanish culture, and like the predominant Spanish culture by the untrained eyes or whatever being Mexican, it's like, yeah, it's dope to celebrate them, but it's also like, there's so much other things down here.
Like, exactly. That's just like one part.
Yeah. And it's like, and for me, I kind of get to see the flip side where like a lot of people, when you say you're from the Caribbean, and they're like, oh, are you Jamaican? It's like,
right.
The non-Jamaican people are like, no, I'm from this place. And like, so as like a Jamaican person, I'm like, yeah, like they're from here. And that's like a really cool country and island too. They have like really dope traditions
and culture. Yeah,
so it's like that part I could only imagine as a person within the culture, you know, trying to like learn about it, but like you're not either on the island or you're not in a location that really, really feeds, you know, the history. You can have that bittersweetness like Ronnie said, and even with that bittersweetness and the bitter part being very, very bitter, the sweet part is also amazing to me. It's like awe-inspiring. It's heartwarming, and even for me, is because you discover how powerful of a tool fiction can be. Because like Ronnie took that disconnection that they felt, and when given the opportunity, they used it as a part of their foundation to build this epic coming of age story. Mm-hmm. And it's like, it's epic, y'all. And we'll get more into that right after this break.
What is up, listeners? Lou here, and I'm interrupting this wonderful episode with Navani and Wilson, asking for a bit of help. You may have noticed these last couple episodes have sounded a little different, and that's because our wonderful producer and composer, Deviant Sounds, was unfortunately in a car accident. He is currently unable to produce work, not only for us, but for any of his clients, meaning right now he has no income, and medical bills are kind of expensive. So He has a GoFundMe going right now to help relieve some of that cost until he can get back on his feet producing those audio sounds that your ears love. If you want to help out, please follow us on Twitter at PoyifPod, at PoyifPod.com, or follow the link in the episode description to help our boy out. Every cent counts. I really hope you enjoy this episode, and I really hope you can help our boy out. Peace.
Hi, we're back. As I said before the ad break, we're going to look at how we can use fiction as the vehicle to establish or even further solidify the bond between our cultural identity and ourselves.
Yes. So we're going to return to Ronnie because they did such a great job of breaking down how Baba Gwai helped them work through some of those anxieties and worries.
Right, right, right. And we're going to tack in Sabrina and Vanessa because they also have some dope commentary.
Yes.
Working on Baba Gwai and other projects moving forward, I really tied a lot from the aspect of not feeling Puerto Rican enough because I couldn't speak Spanish, even though I could kind of like understand it. I was aware of the culture and the history, but I wasn't raised in it, I guess. And for Kachi, she grows up in, you know, the Taino community, which has its own culture, and then she's thrown into the culture of the Spanish colonizers and, you know, the African enslaved people. And she's kind of having to like relearn how to exist with these two other groups that are aware of her culture and of her people and identity, but it's not enough for her to truly feel at home and at peace. And so even though she can kind of spot similarities of like, hey, you know, like my family does this thing too, or hey, we kind of cook food the same way, it's not enough to truly feel like we are the same in a sense, or that we are one true community. And so I really projected a lot of that onto Kachi and just finding a way to accept that even if you're thrown to these places where you may not feel completely at home or you feel like you don't belong, you can still kind of look within yourself and find assurance that you are enough. And you don't have to throw on a facade or you don't have to overproject yourself just to satisfy someone else's ideas of what you're supposed to be like. And so that's a lot of where I want to take her journey whenever I start working on more in the future, with her coming to terms with being okay with who she is, her own limitations, and not having to push herself just to meet what somebody else expects her to be.
It's funny because I didn't know too much about my own heritage until I started working at Labor in Kenya. Admittedly, I've never been to Puerto Rico and my Spanish is awful. But I did learn a lot about the history of the island and where my ancestors came from. So that's kind of shaped the stories that I want to tell. I actually, I've done a couple of illustrations of, the Taino gods, which, the Taino mythology belonged to the original natives of the island, the Taino Indians. I've illustrated a couple drawings and I was part of a gallery in Hartford a while back and all my artwork was based off of Taino myths. So working on that project kind of inspired me to research that, to see the stories that the natives believed in and kind of learn more about the culture, what shapes Puerto Rico now. I kind of want to dive more into it, do a little bit more research. A lot of people have told me they've never seen like certain these gods like illustrated before because I kind of draw them like superheroes, you know, because I'm really big into mythology. So I kind of make them like larger than life superheroes. It's kind of like Thor with the Norse mythology, except it's a whole different thing. I kind of create it in that light because I've tried to see if anyone else has done it, and I looked it up to see if there's any like other illustrations, and there's a few, but not. I kind of draw them almost like they're part of the MCU, you know, like larger than life kind of things like that. And I always thought it was interesting to explore them as like these great like super beings, you know, because to the Taino people they were like they're part of their creation myth, you know. So working on La Buringueña is because that's how she gets her power. She gets it from the Taino goddess Atabex, who's kind of like I want to say like the Zeus equivalent in Taino mythology. Like that's the top dog. So I kind of like to explore that because my love for mythology kind of takes me there. But I never would have learned about it if not working on La Buringueña. And I try to draw the characters as they would be, with darker skin, darker hair, more curvaceous figures. you know, I kind of try to explore a different, something new, something different. I'm still kind of learning as I go too about certain parts of the island and why certain, like, cause I think certain cities, on the island still have like Taino names, which is crazy. Like, Umakao, I want to say Manabo too. You know, just working on that project has kind of sparked that interest to learn more about my own heritage and being able to represent that. Cause, I think second generation. So, and I grew up in New England like my whole life. And, you know, there's a large population of Hispanic people where I live, you know, but it's kind of created like this little bubble around me. But I never really thought about Puerto Rico as being like part of me and something that's central to my own being here. Working on La Borinquena, like it's kind of given me a sense of pride almost. And I'm like, wow, I belong to this island that has so much history and culture and beauty and stuff like that. And I kind of want to explore more of the imagery and like the values of it and just learn more. I think it's really kind of sparked this exploration of identity.
It's derived from personal experience, you know. My husband is a Polish, German, Irish dude, very, you know, sweet guy. But as a result, I rarely get to speak Spanish anymore. And you do start to lose it. And, you know, Manu's story is tied to my own in that I used to be in New York. You know, I grew up in Valley Stream, and I had family in the Bronx, Brooklyn, Queens. And, you know, all our family gatherings was everybody getting together, you know, and in the basement we'd bring out the guitars, and it was, you know, Puerto Rican food and Puerto Rican music and bomba y plena and stuff like that. And then at some point, everybody moved back to the island and we scattered. You know, those of us, especially my generation, stayed behind, and, you know, it created the disconnect. And so, you know, there's a, I don't mind spoiling it because it's coming up pretty quickly, but in one of the coming episodes, you know, she's having this very critical conversation with her grandmother when she goes back to the island to say her farewell because her grandmother is sick. And, you know, she she comes right out and she's like, you know what my sister thinks of me? My Spanish is terrible. I don't get to cook your recipes anymore because they're all for feeding a horde. And there's only one of me. And, you know, I've almost forgotten what this music sounds like. And, you know, am I even Puerto Rican anymore? And so, you know, her grandmother replies to her and it says, hey, when fools come to steal your gifts and abuse you, you fight back. And when hurricanes come, you face the storm, and what it takes from you, you rebuild. And that makes you the very definition of a Puerto Rican.
All right, so there's a lot to unpack from those clips, y'all. Like, so much.
Yes, definitely. Where do I start? Okay, I can relate to what Ronnie and Sabrina both touch on in terms of not speaking Spanish or living up to certain expectations of what people expect us to be as Puerto Ricans. And what you can just see from, you know, that group of people is that no one experience is going to be exactly the same. Like, yeah, there's many customs and traditions that we all still have in common, whether it's through our foods that, you know, we eat or our music that we play, especially around the holidays. You'll see a lot of that. They greet each other with a bendición and a kiss on the cheek, but no one way of growing up is going to be the same. So once I learned that, it was so freeing. That changed everything for me. And also when they touch on like not being connected, like where you live. So I was born in the Bronx, but then moved later up, you know, upstate, and I was disconnected from a huge Puerto Rican community. And I felt that a lot. So books were there for me. Books were always my escape. And I think that's another way, like the power of fiction that they touch on too, is like, you can see these awkward sides of ourselves, the things that make someone an outsider portrayed, and also watch as they learn that it's what makes them special and it becomes their superpower. And then you apply that to yourself.
Ooh, bars, y'all. All of that, all of that, just bars, 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 bars. Same. Yeah. Cause like what I find especially fascinating here is about that freeing feeling you get when you see yourself fully flawed, awkward, fantastic, you know, that whole self in fiction. And hearing how Ronnie, Vanessa, and Sabrina were able to take their curiosity and sometimes their anxieties by their respective identities and then marry it with their talents to create stories, and then just have that marriage right there, have that help them become a bit more whole and resolved. It's remarkable, yo. And so that got me thinking, Ivani.
What's up?
How would you describe your experience with fiction and its influence it had on you and your identity?
Oof, so much. I mean, when I think about it, a lot of YA has actually had a great impact on me, funny enough. I mean, I still read a lot of YA, reading work like Children of the Blood and Bone or works by authors like Daniel Jose Older, his novel Shadow Shaper, where like the protagonists are young people of color that hone in on their spiritual powers and ideas of our traditional Santeria religions and Yoruba practices. Being accepted as something special and empowering in this space, that was really huge for me. So I latched onto that theme a lot. And even when I watch sci-fi movies or like series nowadays, there's one called Always a Witch, Siempre Bruja. And it's about a Colombian time traveling witch, which I see, you know, bits and pieces of my culture transcending and kind of learning to own that as a source of power, not shame. And accepting ourselves is like a huge message to me that I still get from a lot of fiction. And I feel a sense of representation in those works coming to the mainstream now, even like Miles Morales in Spider-Man. I think that was a huge breakthrough to see him, you know, like in Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. That had a huge profound effect on me, even though like he's a boy and it's an animated, you know, movie. Still, like as an adult, I watched that over and over because of the duality it shows. Like he's Puerto Rican and African American, which is like a lot of people in my family. He's from Brooklyn. So he's urban, but he's also super smart and nerdy and going to a really great high school. He's studying physics. And it's like he listens to hip hop and he tags up graffiti. So, I mean, a lot of that was me growing up, living in all those worlds at once. And you can be all those things at the same time. And I was so thrilled that I could see that on the big screen.
Ooh, see? Yeah, that like all of that. Miles had so much of me in him, like you're saying, you know, the science nerd, but you know, living in the city, loving hip hop.
Right.
Just, yeah, you know, like loving physics. And it's like, oh man, how can all these worlds be in one person? And they're like okay with it, because at times I had that struggle, you know, it's like, how can I be okay with sports, anime, mm-hmm. you know, like historical fiction, like all of that stuff.
Yeah, owning like you like these things that are maybe not considered cool.
Right. And you didn't really see it because, you know, in TV shows before this diversity thing started happening and folks started realizing, oh wait, this is a great idea. Like you saw the jock, you saw the nerd, you saw the goth, you saw the prep. And it was like, well, I mean, what if I have a little bit of all five of those things in me?
Exactly. It's not so one dimensional. People are not that one dimensional. And
yeah.
I've seen a lot. So I'm glad to see it represented now though on TV, because you just never see that.
That's big facts. Yeah. And see like that familiarity and that excitement that we've got going on is a common theme that we saw as we interviewed all our guests for the season. And for real, Sabrina summed it up perfectly for me when she talked about her feelings towards La Borinquena.
And a lot of the cultural references too within the La Borinquena, the way that she talks, a lot of members of my family talks that way, you know, that Spanglish kind of thing. Just like little things like that. Because there are other people, there's so many people and cultures that aren't explored, I think, in popular media. Like I was watching Coco the other day, and I love that movie so much. And I'm not Mexican, but there's a lot of similarities with, you know, the importance on family and that being together all the time, and like the food and the parties and the way that they talk to each other is so much like my family. Even Coco, Miguel's grandmother, like looks just like, actually his great grandmother, but the way that she looks in the movie looks just like my grandma who just passed away recently. Even watching that movie now, I'll start crying because she looks so much like her. That created an even deeper emotional connection with that movie for me, because there are characters in that movie that look just like my family, you know, so it kind of feels like home in a sense. you know? And I always feel like that can have a profound effect when something feels like home.
Yes, Labor en Kenya. I stand for her so much because this was the first time I saw a female Puerto Rican superhero. And that's huge, y'all. Like, the sense of pride to have someone that you can relate to, like Sabrina mentions, she speaks Spanglish, which is, like, nuanced in itself. She eats pasteles for holidays. You know, she's looking forward to, like, this special food that she's going to have with her family. You pick up on these small things. And then at the same time, she's a marine biologist. So she's, like, super smart. And she's using her gifts to save the island. It's like, wow, we can be our own heroes. We can be all those things at once. And I think that's the major takeaway, right? It's like finding a home in these tiny flashes of self-recognition. It means a lot, especially for those of us that grew up feeling kind of like outside the culture or separated from it.
See, I know it feels like it's said too often, but it honestly isn't said enough. Diverse storytelling matters and it is needed. Uh-huh. And like, yeah, it's really just that. It matters and it's needed. But I wanted to work out a thought I've been wrestling with. So while Sabrina's talking about the Spanglish in La Borinquena and the feelings of familiarity she felt while she was watching Coco, amazing, amazing piece of cinema right there, it got me thinking more about identity and family.
Okay. I'd love to see where you're going with this, and I'm sure our listeners would too. So let's unpack it after this quick break.
Hey, podcast family. Wilson here. As you all may be aware, Puerto Rico's southwest region has been plagued by a series of earthquakes that has caused widespread damage. So the team here reached out to Rosa Colon, series guest, and featured on this episode to write a quick PSA to inform you all what you could do to help in this time of tragedy. So what I'll be reading is what she's written for you all. Houses and schools have been damaged, and people are sleeping outside of their homes in tents or in makeshift camps. Sadly, the government has failed to organize an effective plan for rehoming the displaced families. What can you do if you don't live in Puerto Rico but want to help? I'd ask you to contact grassroots organizations in your state that might be helping out already and donate whatever you can. Also, emailing your congressperson and representatives asking them to release the aid that was promised to Puerto Rico is also important. Being wary of how the money will be spent by Puerto Rico's government is a legitimate concern. Politicians need reminding that this isn't a numbers game. People are suffering. Lastly, if you have friends on the island, check up on them. This is a mental health crisis too. People are anxious and scared, and listening is just as valuable as donating food and water. In the show notes, there are also links to organizations that can help you get started with your search if you are unable to locate or contact your local grassroots orgs that are in your state or neighborhood.
And we're back. So Wilson, tell me more about this thought.
All right, bet. So Vanessa, Sabrina, and Ronnie used their creative talents to help them work through the doubts and concerns they had about their Puerto Rican-ness, right? At whatever point in their lives they had that, you know, they were able to use fiction and their talents to do that. And while they've reached varying levels of secureness within their identity, it got me thinking again about how our identity can be challenged by someone within our community, right? And within our own family even, right? And where does that challenge come from? Like, where does that need to challenge us come from? What's the source of that family tension?
Yes. Let's get to the bottom of what this so-called divide between Puerto Ricans stateside and on the island is really about. And who's perpetuating it and why? I mean, especially when we remember Puerto Rico is still a colony of the U.S.
It hasn't been that great all the time, but I think that's on purpose. Like, after seeing what happened with these protests, I could, like, say, like, yeah, it's on purpose. Of course, you want to create divide because we're a bunch of people, and we don't have a voice if we're on the island, but we have a voice if we're on the United States. So it's not necessarily in the benefit of everyone if all of a sudden everybody starts working together towards a common goal, because historically, it's been painted a lot, especially after PROMESA and after the hurricane, it came back a little bit too. There's always this, you moved away, so I'm resentful that you moved away or that you live somewhere that you have more benefits than I. And then the diaspora would be a little bit like, you think you're more legit than me because you were born on the island and you treat me differently and it's been like that, but for no reason, really, because you can't say, like, that feud in fiction, like the McCoys. Who started that? Who knows? Like, but they keep fighting.
I'm always a sucker for a real good callback. And hearing Rose's thoughts on the tension brought me back to what you said, Navani, about your Spanish fluency being judged while your parents made a conscious choice to introduce you to English first because they didn't want you to face that discrimination they faced when they got to the States and, you know, they spoke English with a Puerto Rican accent.
Right, right.
Yeah. And then that got me to think about Vanessa and her stories that she shared about her mom's experience when her mom got to the States and how that experience just like blew my mind.
The whole business of having a colonized mind, right? You know, we talk about the effect that colonization has had on Puerto Ricans who live on the island. Well, you know, Puerto Ricans who live on the mainland, there is a psychological colonization happening there. This notion of, like, I need to blend in. I need to, you know, suppress these parts of myself. And maybe it doesn't happen as much now that, you know, we're living in the age of the internet and things like that. You know, my mom, when she came to the island of Manhattan, she was 8 years old and she didn't speak any English. And she was, I think, 8 years old or 7 years old or something like that. And her teacher locked her in the closet because she didn't speak English. And so my mom basically, you know, internalized that experience and decided that not only would she speak English, she would speak it as fluently and eloquently as anyone around her who was, you know, a white New Yorker. So, like, you talk to her now, and she's in Raleigh, North Carolina, and she's the only Puerto Rican New Yorker there, and it makes for some interesting stories about, like, my mom in the South. But, you know, moral of the story being, she erased a lot of what outwardly made her Puerto Rican. What othered her is what she put a lot of energy into repressing.
Whew. That's some heavy, heavy, heavy stuff right there. Mm. There's a lot to pull apart. As always, when we're dealing with cultural identity. Well, before we get to pulling it apart, Navani, I wanted to touch on a report you did focusing on this feud and how all the stateside and island tension all came to a head when Madison Anderson was crowned Miss Puerto Rico. Because I can't help but think about how all these things intersect and then converge.
Right.
Yeah, right? So let's just give our listeners a real quick spark notes of what happened and why the conversation that resulted was and is so important. And don't worry, y'all. We're going to drop the full piece as bonus content.
Ooh, bonus content. Yes. Thank you. Well, real quick little summary is when that happened, my Facebook feed blew up. It was like a lot of people were like, why did she win? She's not even from, you know, Puerto Rico. She wasn't born there. She wasn't raised there. Like, this is ridiculous. And then I felt a way because I'm like, well, I'm born and raised in New York. Does that mean I'm not Puerto Rican? So I got a little defensive and I went on, started interviewing people to get to the bottom of this, of like, what makes someone Puerto Rican enough? Who gets to decide that? Like, why is this a thing? So I had some very interesting like responses to people that I interviewed, but I interviewed a lot more people from the US and it would be interesting to hear someone from the island and their take on it too.
Yeah. So yeah, that's amazing because Rosa's take and then Vanessa's mom's, you know, Vanessa's story of her mom's experience kind of like lets you know like, oh, there's this, it's kind of orchestrated. It's not like, oh, we just left the island and then we have beef, or you were never born on the island, so we gotta have beef. There's like judged and vilified. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? When you leave the island and get to the States and you don't speak perfect English, but then like you come back to the island and you don't speak perfect Spanish. You're
Spanish,
like, oh,
yeah.
It's like, so that whole thing is just kind of like, what? Like, how does this even make sense?
Exactly. Like, who is orchestrating this ideology, right? And especially when you go back and forth because Puerto Ricans are citizens of the U.S. So it's like you're going to have constant migration back and forth and that you shouldn't be judged for that. And I don't know, just the biggest takeaway that I took from all the experiences that I learned about was just like it doesn't make one right or wrong. They're all different and that's okay.
Dope. Yeah, that's for real. That's for real. And to think about it, as you said, you know, the whole idea of like Puerto Rico is still a colony of the U.S. and Puerto Ricans are citizens. But the whole thing is Puerto Ricans only have legislative rights if they move to the States. So there's this piece of like, yo, members of the diaspora, those who live on the island, there's that, you need that unification, because if you live stateside, that's how you can enact change.
You can vote, exactly. But we need to know what to vote on, right? So we have to lean on the people on the island and realize, like, what are your issues? Because we don't live your experience. So like you said, we have to be unified.
Yeah. And it makes me think of, like, you know, all the platitudes and all the statements of, like, togetherness that we can have. Like, even E Pluribus Unum, right? Out of many one, like, out of many different Puerto Rican experiences, there's one. You got to have, like, one voice for the Puerto Rican struggle, or even the Puerto Rican, like, pursuit of whatever X would be, that pursuit of X. And it's just real, because, you know, you have, like, the whole a fist is more powerful than five separate fingers. And we saw some of that, right, with the whole, with the Ricky Renuncio thing that happened. Everybody unified. So it's definitely possible.
It's possible, exactly. And I think part of, like, if there is a silver lining to Hurricane Maria, I think that would be it, is that it forced us to unite and lean on each other, because the government failed Puerto Rico and people from the diaspora stepped up big time. And I think that was, like, a really big takeaway, is like, oh, we're gonna have to lean on each other. It doesn't matter who's in the States, who's not in the States, and move forward. And a lot of that was also in the protesting. I think they were fed up at that point.
Yeah, facts. Yeah, so, like, in that whole move forward thing is something that Rosa touched on, and I just love how she said it. So, you know, I'm gonna just have her close us out right here with that.
Let's do it.
I've had to unlearn, because it was part of the vocabulary here. Like, you would say, well, she's not Puerto Rican, she's from New York, she's New Yorkan, or she's or that person is not actually Puerto Rican, they were born in the United States. I've seen people actively try to change that vocabulary in the past years. I know people, some people don't even like the word diaspora, but it's a word, you know, we don't have another one. So I like that much better. Like, yeah, well, she's diaspora. Yeah, she, or you can say, like, she's Puerto Rican, but she was born in New York, and that's it. You don't have to other them, right? Other people so much. And I've seen, like, the dialogue change quite a bit in the past few years. So I think, like everything, the newer generations are the ones who are going to reconcile that, because what are you going to do when more than half your friends live in the United States or in Europe or in Latin America, and they're Puerto Rican, they're your friends, they're family, but we just live all over the place. So it's something that I think is going to fade away. Sure, it'll come back because families fight, but not as bad as it used to be. Like, I've heard of people, older people, like baby boomers maybe. Oh, well, I don't dare come back because people will treat me differently, or they'll know that I'm not actually, like, I'm not a true blue. And that's crazy. So hopefully we're going in the right direction towards breaching that. Because, like I said, who started that? I don't know who started that.
All right. That is all we have today on Rico and Sueños.
This was such a great dialogue. Seriously, thanks for taking the time to touch on it.
Oh, yeah. I definitely appreciate you being able to lend your voice and your thoughts on it, because, you know, again, identity is complicated.
Yes.
And, you know what I'm saying? It became a bit less complicated, at least in the breakdown, by having someone who is Puerto Rican to help me, like, navigate. So, yeah.
Oh, thank you.
Now, shout out to Deviant Sounds, who has steadily been delivering amazing music for us, like, so good. And our non-musical stylings are handled by Vanessa Flores, who you can hire to help you produce your podcast and any other audio-related project you have by checking out her website, VanessaFloresAudio.com.
The wonderful cover art for this season was done by another amazing Vanessa Flores. Follow her on Twitter at Vani Flores, V-A-N-I-E, Flores, and find other dope pieces on her website, VanessaFloresArt.com.
You can check us out on the Twitter machine at POYIF Pod and engage with us using the hashtag POYIF, P-O-Y-I-F, and the hashtag Rich in Dreams. So, you know what I'm saying? Do that. You can also find me on Twitter at Words Wilson.
All right. And I'm available at Navani Knows on Instagram. So, N-A-V-A-N-I-K-N-O-W-S. And quick shameless plug, if you haven't checked it out yet, you can see one of my stories in the graphic novel anthology, Reconstruction. all proceeds go towards ongoing Puerto Rico relief. So check that out wherever you get your comics.
Dope. So this has been Greco and Sueños, the inaugural season of the Power of You in Fiction podcast, the nonfiction podcast about fiction and its very real effects on our lives.
Yes, yes. Love that. Very real effects. Thank you so much. Bye, everybody.